and welcome, listeners and friends, to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. I'm your reader, Maddie Ryan, and why don't we go ahead and have a look around today's front page. First big article of the day is DRA pledges $1 million, 93 grants awarded, new CEO takes helm. Our second article here says groups work opens outdoors to those with disabilities. An action track chair provided by Accessibility Wisconsin helps a Cuba City man get back out in nature. And the last featured article is a Life Remembered section is Ironside, an ambassador of cool. And we will jump in with that first article. DRA pledges $1 million, 39 grants awarded, new CEO takes helm. This is by Jeff Montgomery of the TH. The Dubuque Racing Association Board of Directors on Tuesday approved more than $1 million in grant funding for local organizations. During its monthly meeting, the board green-lighted $1,006,461 in funds for 93 nonprofits. The total is in line with the awards from last year, which were split into two allocations and totaled around $1 million. DRA Board Chairman Kevin Lynch said he was excited about the contribution, particularly after the struggles that Dubuque casinos have endured over the past year. The fact that we're able to do this after going through a year in which we were essentially closed for a couple of months, it's a testament of the staff and the team, he said. I know the charities and nonprofits are thankful, and we are happy to do it. The DRA is a nonprofit license holder for both Dubuque casinos. The grant awards highlighted a busy meeting during which a board members also welcomed the new president and CEO of Q Casino and Hotel. Alex Dixon officially took over the position on Monday, just a couple of weeks after moving to Dubuque. Former president and CEO Jesus Alves still is employed by the casino and will temporarily assist Dixon as he takes the reins. Dixon said he was pleased that his first official meeting as the casino's leader came at a time when the DRA was distributing funding to local organizations. He emphasized that these contributions are part of what drives Q Casino to succeed. The better the casino does, and the better the Diamond Joe does, the better our community does, he said. It is simply amazing to think about the impact the gaming industry has on the region. 57 of the 93 grant awards went to organizations in the city of Dubuque, and 91% of the dollars went to organizations within Dubuque County. Overall, nonprofits in 21 communities and 3 states, with Illinois and Wisconsin being the other grants, were approved for grants. For many, the dollars are a major game changer. Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens received $20,000 that will help make its popular Japanese garden handicapped accessible. It is possibly our most popular garden, and one of our main goals is to make it accessible to everyone, said Executive Director Sandy Hegelson. The vision is for the garden came from a Japanese designer, while volunteers spent about a decade building it. But Hegelson noted that visitors who use wheelchairs or parents who try to bring their kids to the gardens in strollers often have a difficult time. About once a week, we get a call from someone asking if the garden is accessible. She said, "It will be great to complete this project." A $20,000 grant for Crescent City Community Health Center in Des Moines was also provided a major boost. CEO Gary Collins said the funds will help the organization pay for new optometry equipment, reduce patients' payment for specialty care visits, and help clients pay for glasses and contacts. "One of the biggest barriers our patients have is transportation," he said. "Having more equipment here in our building helps eliminate that barrier." Collin believes the grant will help Crescent Center further develop its relevantly new optometrical offerings. "We started offering optometry services in May," he said. This is the next logical step in that program, and we are very excited about it. DRA Director of Grants, Kathy Young, said the number of applicants this year was slightly down. Many nonprofits are still unsure of what their future looks like, she said. I think some struggle to come up with a specific project or program or idea of need, given that there are so many uncertainties right now. The pandemic's impact on Dubuque's casinos disrupted the standard timetable for the DRA's grant process. The previous year's grant funding was distributed through two separate allocations, in the fall of 2020 and during the winter. Young noted that this year's grant cycle was impacted, with nonprofits facing a consolidated application time that might have discouraged some from submitting proposals. Dixon noted that financial figures in recent months suggest the grant funding could increase by the time 2022 rolls around. The Dubuque market recorded gambling revenue of $11.65 million in July, up about 10.5% compared to the same month in 2019. Casino officials are generally using 2019 figures, the most relevant point of comparison to the current year, given the massive impact COVID-19 had on the market last year. Casino reported gambling revenue of $4.68 million last month, up 11.6% compared to July 2019. Meanwhile, Diamond Joe brought in $6.97 million in July revenue, up from $6.35 million during the same month 2 years ago. Things are going in the right direction, Dixon said. Now it's time to go pour some lighter fluid on the charcoal. Let's keep things heating up. He emphasized that the 2022 game at Field of Dreams will be among the opportunity he seeks to seize upon. Major League Baseball recently announced it would return to the Dyers Field next year, with reports stating that it would be a matchup between the Chicago Cubs and Cincinnati Reds. The eyes of the nation will be on this area, he said. We have to put our best foot forward, and we have to think about how we take all those eyeballs that are focused on this area and convert that into foot traffic here. Next front page story, groups work opens outdoor to those with disability. An action track chair provided by Access Ability Wisconsin helps a Cuba City man get back into nature. This is by Bennett Goldstein of the TH. Dateline, Cuba City, Wisconsin. There are moments when John Rope considers that he needs a little help. It might be entering or exiting a car or moving an obstruction out of his way. At 62, the retired farmer is not a spring chicken, but he prefers to do things himself. Actually, I don't feel like I've got a disability. I feel like a normal person, said Raup of Cuba City. I just can't walk or do as much as I did before. In 2015, he was loading bales using a tractor in his hay shed when a stack of five toppled. One bale fell about 20 feet and crushed him. As Raup lay motionless on the ground, his son waited with him until a rescue squad arrived. He ultimately was transported by helicopter to a Madison hospital, where doctors operated on Raup's severed spine, broken in two places, along with both collarbones and multiple ribs. They implanted two pins and nine screws and told him he might never walk again. Raup can neither feel nor move anything from the waist down. I'm pretty lucky, he said. God kept me here for a reason. Raup credits his wife, his guardian angel, and three children for assisting him through his recovery. He attended physical therapy to really learn how to raise himself from bed and dress. Raup retired from farming shortly after his accident and sold off his dairy herd. An avid hunter, he no longer could imagine himself traveling through the woods unassisted until about 3 years ago when he met Monica Spenley, president and founding member of Accessibility Wisconsin. The nonprofit organization, based in Mineral Point, loans at no cost to users Action track chairs, which are outdoor wheelchairs that feature caterpillar treads instead of conventional wheels. They can navigate rocks, logs, shallow bogs, and snow. Each chair comes with an outdoor trailer and charging port. Spenny calls them $20,000 hiking boots. Accessibility Wisconsin owns 20 chairs across 12 Wisconsin counties and is waiting on another order of two more. She hopes that to one day host a chair in each of the state's 72 counties. People with spinal cord injuries benefit, as do people who are temporarily incapacitated or simply feeling the effects of age, Spallini said. Some use the chairs to watch birds, ice fish, or plow their driveways. Now, Raup oversees the lending of wheelchairs to residents, typically from the southwest section of the state. Prairie du Chien resident Fred Jarrett, 60, started to borrow a chair in 2018 after his physical therapist informed him of the opportunity. Jarrett used it to turkey and deer hunt and intends to try his hand at fishing from a riverbank. In 2016, Jarrett fell off a roof while shingling. The 25-foot fall left him paralyzed, also from the waist down. "I was so shocked when the doctors came in and said I would never walk again," he said. "That hits you pretty hard." Jarrett faced a three-month recovery. Physical therapists worked with him 6 days per week from 9 a.m. to noon. He took a one-hour lunch break and then returned for an afternoon session from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Jarrett misses bass fishing tournaments and working, but he said, "I'm the same old me, I'm just in a wheelchair." Mark LaBarbera, executive director of Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, said the organization has committed to using its network of businesses and sports clubs to locate hosts of other chairs. "It's amazing how many people who are not in wheelchairs do not understand how a simple barrier such as 6-inch step can prevent someone from accessing the outdoors," he said. Raup uses the chair four or five times per month. During deer season, he hunts in the Dykeville Bottoms. He also enjoys challenging himself on the archery course at the Isaac Walton League site in Benton, an area previously inaccessible to him that winds through the woods. Raup continues to hope for medical advancements that will enable physicians to restore his mobility. "It's just a matter of time," he said. That was a really wonderful article there. I think they should have more things like that for people to access the outdoors. All right, we are moving on over to the last featured article on the front page, and it is from a Life Remembered section. Ironside, an ambassador of cool. The Dubuque musician played a part in shaping the local arts and culture scene. This is from Elizabeth Kelsey of the TH. Although Dubuque resident Mike Ironside had many accomplishments to his name, his loved ones will remember him for the way he cared deeply about everyone he met. "Mike just had an innate ability to connect with people," said his wife, Julie Steffen. "He was interested in everyone, and he wanted to hear their stories, even in casual conversations. People walked away feeling like Mike really cared about them." Ironside, 57, died Monday after battling a rare form of cancer. He contributed greatly to the local arts scene, from organizing music festivals to playing in a local band to chronicling the area's events in local publication 365 Inc. He was here and active during a resurgence in arts and live music and cultural participation in the community, and he was at the epicenter of that through all of it, said Bryce Parks, publisher of 365 Inc. Steffen and Ironside met at Loras College in the 1980s. Steffen was already friends with Ironside's brother and had the hugest crush on Ironside when they met. "When we got to be friends, I thought, just play it cool, Julie," she said, laughing. "I was thrilled when he asked me out." After graduation, the couple moved to Chicago, then to Japan. While overseas, they taught English, and Ironside formed a band, helped launch a local music festival, and recorded an album. After marrying in Japan on March 20, 1993, Stefan and Ironside returned to Dubuque in 1995 and jumped straight into the area's growing arts scene. Dan Labonchio, executive director of Dubuque Main Street, said Ironside worked as a program specialist for the nonprofit for a few years, beginning in 1999. In his role, Ironside coordinated a variety of events, including the concert series Dubuque and All That Jazz, known now as Music on Main. Mike really did help take Dubuque and All That Jazz to the next level, Labonchio said. He did a lot of rearranging the layout of the town clock plaza to better accommodate the growing crowds we were seeing. Ironside also served as director of Dubuque Fest and president of Dubuque County Fine Arts Society. He remained involved with both organizations after his tenure concluded. I would reach out to Mike, and he would always come to me with loads of experience, said Allie Levasseur, current Dubuque Fest director and Dubuque County Fine Arts Society president. He was always in our back pocket whenever we had any questions. Ironside's involvement in local arts made him a valuable asset for 365 Inc., where he worked since the publication's launch in 2000. He's such a unique guy, Parks said. We called him our ambassador of cool because he's just cool. Ironside also played the bass in Dubuque band The Lonely Goats. He was our organizer and our steady voice. He kept the band on track, and he was always willing to try something new, said Jimmy Berg, the band's drummer. Berg's wife, Amanda Kevern, performs belly dancing with The Lonely Goats. She said Ironside helped her conquer stage fright and freely shared advice. He was the big brother that I always wanted and looked up to, she said. He always had the ability to say the right thing right when I needed it. Kevern recalled long chats with Ironside during the Lonely Goats practices on Wednesday nights. Those were my favorite moments, she said. We would be joking around, being lighthearted, but also tackling some serious conversations, whether it was asking for advice or just talking about worldviews. I could always look to him for a better judgment. In 2016, Ironside was diagnosed with Waldenstrom's, hang tight with me on this one, it's a big word, Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia, a type of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. The cancer is very rare, with only about 1,500 new cases diagnosed in the U.S. each year, according to the International Waldenstrom's Microglobulinemia Foundation. There is no cure, and the disease has a median survival rate of 5 to 10 years. Ironside dealt with the diagnosis in his typical positive fashion, according to Stefan, navigating chemotherapy and immunotherapy treatments with grace. In the fall of 2020, Ironside received an additional diagnosis of myelodysplastic syndrome. The condition weakened his immune system as the body failed to produce white blood cells, leaving him susceptible to infection. Mindful of the COVID-19 pandemic and Ironside's vulnerability, the Lonely Goats played outdoor gigs this summer and took precautions, said Berg. We had a series of protocols, and then he had extra ones, he said. It was very important to us that we did the thing that we loved the most with the person we loved very much. There is no place Ironside would rather have finished his final days than on stage among his bandmates. His laid-back personality was never on better display than when he was up there playing the bass for the Lonely Goats, LeBlanco said. He was so easy to work with, so knowledgeable, so personable. They don't make too many like Mike. We'll all miss him a great deal. All right, heading into some more Dubuque news. Dubuque man sentenced to 15 years in prison for sexually abusing three girls. This is from Kaylee Reese of the TH. A Dubuque man recently was sentenced to 15 years in prison for sexually abusing three girls last year. Damian Love, 46, was sentenced in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County, later pleading guilty to three counts of third-degree sexual abuse and possession of contraband in a correctional institution. He also pleaded guilty to unrelated charges of domestic assault and assault causing injury. Three additional counts of third-degree sexual abuse were dismissed as part of the plea deal, as well as five counts of drug distribution to a minor and two counts of possession of marijuana. As part of his sentence, Love also must register as a sex offender for life. Mr. Love is prepared to and is accepting his responsibility for his action in these matters, public defender Steve Dorazal said in court while representing Love. We understand that these are dangerous felonies. We also understand he will face continuing ongoing punishment for the rest of his life as a result of his actions. Love declined to make a statement in court. Court documents state that officers met with a social worker in September and were told that three girls younger than 18 were sexually abused while on the run from an adolescent treatment facility. After leaving the facility, documents state, the girls ran into Love and were taken to his residence. Two of the girls were familiar with him. Documents state that Love and the girls smoked marijuana and the girls continued to smoke and drink alcohol provided by Love until they were highly intoxicated. Love then sexually assaulted each girl, document states. One of the girls, who stayed with Love a few weeks prior to the September incident, later told officers that he had given her coke and methamphetamine and sexually abused her at the same time as well, documents state. None of the victims appeared in court this week to make a statement, and none of them submitted a written statement to be read on their behalf. Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zerini-Ackley said she was very concerned about the state of mind that the three girls were in when they were preyed upon. As adults in this community, we're supposed to protect minors and understand when they're not in their right mind, she said. Zerini-Ackley also told Love that he should have immediately contacted the adolescent treatment facility after finding out the girls had left. You should have addressed the situation in a very different manner, and I think accepting responsibility is something that you should do, she said, because otherwise a jury would have made you. There is a photo featured on this page with a headline that says State of Destruction. It comes from Stephen Glassman at the TH. Demolition work continues at the former Econo Lodge Inn and Suites at 2090 South Park Court in Dubuque on Tuesday. Dubuque-based trucking company McCoy Group purchased the property in March with plans to eventually tear down the structure. The company previously indicated it was considering the site for possible expansion. We've got a story about ATVs, UTVs. Dyersville okays ATVs, UTVs on streets daily. Mayor says ATVs have operated safely since the passage of ordinance allowing the vehicles on city streets. This is by Kaylee Reese of the TH. Dyersville, Iowa. All-terrain and off-road utility vehicles soon will be allowed daily on Dyersville streets. City Council members voted 4-1 this week to amend the city's current ATV and OURV ordinance to allow such vehicles on city streets from sunrise to sunset from August 27th through October 31st. Mike English casts the lone dissenting vote. In June, council members approved an initial ordinance that allowed ATVs on streets on six long weekends as a sort of trial run. The final two weekends were August 27th to the 29th and September 24th to the 26th. This week, a majority of council members expressed their willingness to expand when ATVs were allowed in the city, since there had not been any issues during the first four weekends on which they were allowed. I haven't heard of anything that shows it's not working, said council member Jim Gibbs. I see more issues with mopeds and other types of vehicles like that than ATVs. He added that he has continued to hear complaints from riders about knowing on which dates they are allowed to use ATVs in the city. They claim that there's just confusion on that, and I can see what's happening. With this weekend, you can. This weekend, you can't, Gibbs said. The Dubuque County ATV-UTV Alliance previously called for a boycott of Dyersville after the ATV/UTV ordinance first was passed. The group posted on Facebook that a better trial run would have allowed the vehicle 7 days per week for a certain period of time, similar to a now amended city ordinance. Dyersville Mayor Jim Havens said at this week's meeting that ATVs have operated safely since they have been allowed, although he at first wasn't sure about daily usage. I don't know about all the time, he said. I think just the weekends would be better if we run through the end of October every weekend. But Gibbs noted that there likely won't be high traffic during the week. If groups are coming out, that's going to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, he said. If you see individuals riding them around town, that's what's going to be around all the time. Council member Jenny Ostwinkle Silva stressed that daily ATV operation on city streets might be a permanent measure adopted by the council. However, she said she was willing to see how it might play out. It'll be a good faith trial period for all of us to see how it goes, she said. English said allowing ATV use isn't state mandated like moped usage is. Someone's got to represent the naysayers, English said. I don't want them on the streets, and there's a lot of people that don't. All right. From the lifestyle section, we have a very fun piece about appetizing local support system. A look at how hand-in-hand connections benefit food and drink establishments. This is from Ava Holshear of the TH. Supporting local by eating, drinking, and shopping at area locations is an integral part of helping the tri-state's character flourish. But what if you could support a local establishment that, in turn, supports other local establishments? Check out an assortment of area bars and restaurants that work hand-in-hand with other local spots to exemplify the phrase strength in numbers. First up, a very good brewery, Dimensional Brewing Company, located at 67 Main Street in Dubuque. They support Flatted Fifth Blues and BBQ Porter's Mill. All food provided at Dimensional Brewing Co. is sourced from Flatted Fifth Blues and Barbecue, Potter's Mill in Bellevue, Iowa. Flatted Fifth specializes in barbecue-style food. Highlights from other Dimensional Brewing Co. menu include a pulled pork sandwich, one of my favorite things to have, burnt ends, and blackened chicken nachos. Although, with Dimensional Brewing Co. Claw Machine IPA, try Flatted Fifth's beloved combo platter with three signature smoked meats. Another establishment you can eat at that will help someone else, American Lady, located at 1630 East 16th Street in Dubuque. They support Catfish Charlie's. American Lady Cruises offer a rotating fixed dinner menu. Keep your eye out for the Caesar's Catfish, three cheese mashed potatoes and chocolate chip bread pudding with caramel sauce. They make dinner with a view to die for. Up next, we have Magoo's Pizza. They are located at 1875 University Avenue, Dubuque. And they support Creamer's Meats. Magoo's Pizza prides itself in fresh, flavorful pizza, and that starts with locally sourced ingredients from Caesar's Meats. Located on Romberg Avenue, Creamer's supplies local restaurants and families with a variety of meats. To enjoy the fresh meat at Magoo's, try the Meat Lover's Pie and pair it with a brownie bites or a special treat. You also can select from a variety of toppings to build a signature pizza. Up next for Munchies, we've got Jubeck New World Brewing. They are located at 115 West 11th Street, Dubuque, and they support the food store, Jitters Coffee and Company, El May Eatery, and Oolong Asian Cuisine. Jubeck New World Brewing is a kid-friendly bar that offers delicious, non-alcoholic products to please their young guests. While you sip on Jubeck Lavender Honey Wheat Beer, treat your children to Millstream Root Beers or Cream Sodas. If you get hungry, you can choose from a selection of local restaurant menus. Food ordered from these locations will be delivered directly to the tap room. Enjoy an egg roll with pepper jelly from the food store, fresh soup from Jitters Coffee and Cafe, the You're in Dubuque pizza from El May Eatery, or Geisa from Oolong Asian Cuisine without leaving the brewery. And we have River Rock Kitchen and Tap. They are located at 550 Main Street in Dubuque, and they support Seven Hills Brewing Company and Bennigan's on the Fly. River Rock Kitchen and Tap offers 10 to 12 beers on tap from Seven Hills Brewing Company, located at 1085 Washington Street. Its menu also includes items from Bennigan's on the Fly, a ghost kitchen located inside the Holiday Inn at 450 Main Street, Bennigan's Monte Cristo sandwich, layers of ham, turkey, and Swiss, an American cheese sandwich between two slices of honey wheat bread, battered and deep fried, coated in powdered sugar, and served with raspberry preserves, is an unusual but mouth-watering fan favorite. LeMay Eatery, located on 1072 Main Street, Dubuque, they support Jubeck New World Brewing, Millwork Brewing, Sandhill Farm, Middenhof Farm, Dubuque Farms, Hook Cheese Co., Micro Girl Greens, Montchever Cheese, O'Connell Organic Acres Farm, and Relio Cheese House. LeMay Eatery takes supporting local seriously. It incorporates a multitude of local producers' fresh ingredients into dishes, as well as offering Jubeck New World Brewing beers on rotating draft. Next time you stop by, order a seasonal IPA with LeMay Eatery's locally sourced pot roast. Don't eat meat? Fear not. The veggie pizza is brimming with flavorful, fresh produce. And last on the list is Convinium Urban Farmstead, located at 2811 Jackson Street, Dubuque. They support Jubeck New World Brewing and Millwork Brewery. Convinium Urban Farmstead is in a league of its own when it comes to fresh, local ingredients. If you were to walk behind the restaurant, you would find greenhouses and garden rows. The produce adds to its delightfully fresh dishes is all grown on site. If you want to taste its freshly grown produce, try the Convinium Salad. Mixed greens with homemade candied walnuts, craisins, feta, red onions, maple balsamic dressing, and optional, but worth it, pesto chicken. The farmstead supports other local businesses by selling Jubeck New World Brewing beers by the can and fresh Millwork Bakery items. To participate in supporting these businesses, order the chicken pesto panini on Millwork Brewery bread or have a Jubeck beer alongside your sweet potato quinoa bowl. Okay, I'm officially hungry after reading all of those. You are listening to a reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, August 18th, 2021 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All materials read on IRIS are intended solely for the use of blind and print handicapped. We're now going to wander over to the obituary section for today. Jane P. Welsh, Jane Patricia Welsh, 70, of Bethany Home Retirement Center, passed away on August 14th, 2021 at Bethany Home. Family and friends may gather from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Friday, August 20th, 2021, at Lennard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where a funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Burial will be in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Jane was born on June 18, 1951, in Dubuque, Iowa, the daughter of Virgil and C. Patricia Stemeyer. She graduated from Waller Catholic High School in 1968 in Dubuque, Iowa, and then received her B.S. from Loyola University, Maryland, Baltimore. She married Bill Welsh Sr. in 1968 at the Church of the Nativity. They later divorced. She worked for Key City Band and BDB&T Bank, both in Dubuque, Hyatt Regency in Washington, D.C., Kippleton Hotel in Alexandria, Virginia, and lastly, as a congressional stenographer for the United States Senate in Washington, D.C. She was accepted into Who's Who in America's colleges. Jean loved to dance, swim, play tennis with her friends while growing up. One of the fondest memories she had growing up was playing hopscotch in the driveway. She truly enjoyed being able to attend and volunteer at National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C. to show support for her father, Virgil Stemeyer's, and brother Matthew Stemeyer's years of service to the Iowa State Patrol. She loved being able to attend and enjoy her granddaughter's musicals and plays and grandson Samuel's ball games. She cared and loved for her three stray cats, Felix, Liberty, and Poppy, like her little furry kids. Jean loved coming back and being able to go on the Mississippi River with her close friends, Tom and Cindy Kiefer, and many more friends when she would come back to Dubuque to visit. Donations can be made in Jane's name to Hospice of Dubuque or Dubuque Humane Society. From The Villages, Florida, William V. Cullen. William V., nicknamed Bill Cullen, age 86, of The Villages, Florida, formerly of Darlington, Wisconsin, passed away unexpectedly on Monday, August 16, 2021, at Ray and Kay Eckerson's Hospice Care Center in Paducah, Kentucky, with his family at his side. He was born on June 15, 1935, in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of Clarence and Adelaine Cullen. Bill grew up on a farm in East Dubuque, Illinois, and graduated from Loras Academy in Dubuque, Iowa. Following high school, Bill enlisted in the United States Army. After being honorably discharged, Bill moved back to the home farm where he worked at Carr Adams Factory in Dubuque, Iowa, and then went to the Ford dealership in Cuba City, Wisconsin. He later moved to Darlington, Wisconsin, where he started his own automotive service station, Collins DX, with his brother Dan. On May 6, 1961, Bill married the love of his life, Elizabeth, nicknamed Betty Timmerman, at Holy Ghost Catholic Church in Dykeville, Wisconsin. Together, they raised their family in Darlington. He retired from Cullen's 76th service station after 39 years. In 2003, Bill and Betty bought a home at The Villages, Florida, where they had resided since. Bill was a member of Holy Rosary Catholic Church in Darlington and its Knights of Columbus, and was a member of St. Mark's the Evangelist Catholic Church in The Villages, Florida. In his free time, Bill loved golfing and was also a member of Darlington Country Club. He also enjoyed traveling with his wife throughout the United States and internationally. Bill was also an avid Chicago Cubs fan, which included family trips to Wrigley Field from his childhood until his passing. He cherished time spent with his family creating memories they will all cherish forever. A memorial mass will be held Saturday, August 21st, 2021 at 11 a.m. at Holy Rosary Catholic Church, 104 East Harriet Street, Darlington, with Reverend Luke Says officiating. A visitation will be held Saturday, August 21st, 2021 from 9 a.m. until 10:45 a.m. at Holy Rosary Catholic Church. The Erickson Funeral Home in Darlington is serving the family. Kimber M. Brandell, Davenport, Iowa. Kimber Marie Brandell, 30, of Davenport, Iowa, formerly of Dubuque, Iowa, went to live with the angels on Monday, August 9th, 2021. Visitation will be on Thursday, August 19th, 2021, from 4 to 5:45 p.m. at Lennard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where a prayer service will be held at 5:45 p.m. Kimber was born on September 20, 1990, in Dubuque, Iowa. Her parents are Thomas and Lori Brandell and Christy Sharkey. Kimber attended Hampson High School and Northeast Iowa Community College, where she earned a computer numeral control operator certificate. Kimberly deeply loved her daughter, Naisa. Naisa was the most important person in her life, her greatest gift. Kimber was very proud of her. Kimber also enjoyed animals of all kinds, especially her dogs and cats. In her spare time, she liked gardening, camping, and art. She particularly loved the ocean and everything about it. Because of her special love of the ocean, her ashes will be scattered there so her spirit will be free. The family would like to express a special heartfelt appreciation to Dion and Sam and her aunt, Connie. The family is grateful for the love, help, and thoughtfulness that anyone else has given Kimber throughout her life. In lieu of flowers, an account has been established at Dupaco Community Credit Union in the name of Naisha Brandel. That wraps up the obituaries for today. Why don't we look at letters to the editor now? The first letter comes from Janet Walker of Cheney Road in Dubuque. As my mother would say, we're all in a mess of Hess. This could have been prevented. COVID-19, with the assistance of the Delta variant, is challenging us. We have the ability to combat it. Scientists provided us with a roadmap to get out of it. The key being to wash your hands, socially distance, and get your shot and mask up. Governor Kim Reynolds is a powerful woman. Her opponent, COVID-19, enhanced with the Delta variant, is more powerful. We have learned that wearing masks assists in slowing the spread of COVID-19. Governor Reynolds has chosen not to allow the school districts to make the decision whether their students and staff should wear masks. Each district knows what is appropriate for them. Iowa school districts need to be allowed to make their own decisions whether to have students and teachers all masked. Our children's lives were threatened when she signed the law. Governor Reynolds made a poor decision and needs to make it right. Keep our children safe. Contact Governor Reynolds and tell her to let school districts provide whether to wear masks. Those represented by Democratic legislatures should remind them that Democrats believed school districts should have the right. They said it with their voices against the bill. Republican members of the legislature wrote the bill and the governor signed it. Hold Governor Reynolds responsible for her actions. From Walter Harrison of Pago Court in Dubuque, I just had to write and give the TH a good pat on the back for all the great coverage of the MLB game at the Field of Dreams. All the articles and all the pictures were just super. What a great staff. Thank you, TH. That was a very nice letter to send in. Speaking of the Field of Dreams, there seems to be some more stories still happening. MLB at Field of Dreams. Little piece of history. Offerman found first home run ball at Field of Dreams game. This is by Jim Leitner of the TH. Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. Nate Offerman doesn't need an authentication sticker from MLB to know he owns a piece of history. The Dyersville Beckman Jr.-to-be worked the MLB at Field of Dreams game as a member of the grounds crew, which gave him access to the cornfields beyond the outfield fence during the event. and he outraced two of his colleagues to get the first of 8 home run balls in the magical game between the Chicago White Sox and New York Yankees on Thursday. MLB said they couldn't authenticate it because they didn't actually see it, and they wouldn't be 100% sure it was the right ball. But I know it's the right ball because I saw it go in there, said Offerman, who won the Iowa Class 2A State Golf Championship this spring and started for the Beckman basketball team this summer. There were a couple of fans along the left line who kept yelling, "One more row, one more row." When I was getting close to it, they saw it the whole time and they knew it was the right ball. It was exactly the right depth of where it should have been to. It's really cool to have it, even if they won't authenticate it. I'm going to have it framed. If anyone really wants it, we'll see if they can get it from me or not. Offerman said the grounds crew had a handful of fans retrieved all of the home run balls from batting practice a few hours earlier, which made him feel more comfortable about the authenticity of the ball. There were no baseballs in the vicinity either. It had to be the right ball, said Ty Roush, a senior-to-be at Beckman and another member of the grounds crew. All the fans by us saw it go in and knew exactly where it was in the corn. It was pretty cool to see Nate run in there and get it and then come out holding the ball up in the air. Offerman and a few other members of the grounds crew watched the game from an area between the left field bleachers and the fence parallel to the foul line. Just 7 batters into the game, in the bottom of the first inning, White Sox first baseman Jose Abreu hit a low line drive off Yankees left-hander Andrew Haney a few rows into the corn in the left field for his 23rd home run of the season. It didn't look like it was going to go, but it just kept going and going and going until it cleared the fence, Offerman said. We just kind of looked at each other, and then we all darted out there. We stopped for a second because we didn't know if we could go out there or not, but security said, "Yeah, go get it." While his buddies tried to navigate their way through the corn, Offerman took a quicker route by running along a small clearance between the left field fence and the corn stalks. He took a left turn into the corn in the approximate area of the ball. The fans were not allowed near the corn during the game. Only the grounds crew and security had access. I didn't know if I'd find it, but the fans kept telling me where it was, Offerman said. I went one more row just like they told me, looked up, and the ball was just sitting there. At first, I didn't know how big of a deal it was. I thought, this is pretty cool. But the more people started talking to me, the more I started to realize how big of a deal it was. Offerman and buddies Bryce Boekholder, Noah Bogue, and Roush accepted positions on the grounds crew approximately a month before the game. Their responsibilities included mowing the grass, making the edges between the grass and dirt look perfect, and watering and fertilizing the grass. The grounds crew also made the cornfield look pristine, despite a recent storm that bent many of the stalks. Using pieces of rebar and zip ties, they propped up the damaged stalks. Major League Baseball hired Budgie Clark, a turf specialist from Palm Harbor, Florida, to oversee the grounds crew for the Field of Dreams project. The crew included 17 local baseball enthusiasts who worked in excess of 30 hours per week leading up to the game. He's a really cool guy, but at the same time, he's very, very picky. But you really have to be picky to make sure the field looks as perfect as it does on TV, Offerman said. We were constantly walking the warning tracks and the grass to make sure there were no weeds, no leaves, no rocks, anything. I didn't want any kind of lip between the grass and the dirt either. But all that nitpicking made Offerman proud on game day. It was awesome to see the reactions from all the players when they were on the field, taking pictures and saying how cool everything looked. And knowing we had a part in making it look so perfect, he said, it was cool to think we were walking on that corn before Kevin Costner and the players walked out of it. We made history. I know there were only 8,000 people at the game, but millions of people were watching on TV and wishing they could be there. It makes you feel good to do something a lot of people wanted to do. Offerman said the grounds crew will continue to maintain the diamond until August, when the Chicago Cubs will play the Cincinnati Reds in the second of what figures to be an annual event. All right, here are some news briefs from the tri-state area. Deary launches labor negotiations with union representing thousands of employees. The parent company of Dubuque Manufacture has started negotiations on a new labor agreement with a union representing thousands of its employees. Deary & Co. and United Auto Workers are discussing an agreement to replace an expiring contract that covers about 10,100 production and maintenance employees at 12 Deary facilities, including John Deere Dubuque Works, according to a press release. The current six-year pact expires on October 1st. Galena police release photo, seek tips on burglary, Galena, Illinois. Galena police on Tuesday released a photo and requested tips related to a burglary earlier this month. Galena VFW post 2665 on South Main Street was broken into at about 4:05 a.m. August 7th when its video gaming machines were forcibly entered. Police today reported that there were two people linked to the crime, dressed in light-colored clothing and possibly in a dark-colored BMW or Audi-type vehicle. The photo shows a lone person dressed in light-colored clothing with darker-colored footwear and possibly wearing gloves. Police previously reported that Gold Room Bar and Grill on South Main Street also was broken into, and there was an attempt made to enter Paradise Bar and Grill on North Main Street. Anyone with information about the crimes or suspicious people or vehicles that may have been seen in the area should contact investigator Keith Brandel at 815-777-2131. From Dyersville, Field of Dreams to become streaming series. Variety reports NBC's Peacock streaming service has greenlit a streaming series inspired by the 1989 baseball classic Field of Dreams, being penned by Michael Schur, whose resume includes The Office and Parks and Recreation. Through the years, Field of Dreams has remained a fan favorite, maintaining its rightful position in the zeitgeist, said NBC Universal Television and streaming president Lisa Katz. She said that, like the film that was nominated for 3 Academy Awards but struck out, the streaming series will be both whimsical and grounded. And that is all the time we have together today. You have been listening to a reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Wednesday, August 18th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All materials read on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. You can catch a recording of this reading anytime on our podcast page at iowaradioreading.org. I've been your reader, Maddie Ryan, and as always, thank you so much for listening.